From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Wow. Glad to be back from North Dakota. It was fantastic, by the way. Great facilities. Thanks to everyone who made it so great. I was over there interviewing Doug Burgum, who very well might be the running mate of Donald Trump and could be the next vice president. Could not be more impressed with him. Whether Donald Trump picks him or not, he's just a fantastic American story. And Alan West at the bottom of the hour, another great American story, too, serving this country for 27 years in the military, in Congress, now running the Texas Republican Party, the Dallas Texas Republican Party in KLIF. Listeners know all about him. A lot of things going on last night. I could not believe what I was witnessing when the president came out to make a speech, but of course did not answer any questions. Before we get to Jonathan Turley about the much misunderstood Supreme Court ruling yesterday, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I mean, that's a lot of money, $186,000, and that's because people have done the math. They've looked at the mortgage, the car payment, the groceries, and they've said, if I want breathing room, that's, by the way, not living luxuriously. That's just feeling like month to month, I'm not under stress. They think they need that much money.
That, of course, is a brand new study that said the average American, the baby boomer, feels as though they have to earn $187,000 a year to live comfortably. What is your threshold? And are you there right now?
Number two.
Well, these are people, several of them, who are very close to President Biden, who love him. And they are adamant that what we saw the other night is not a one-off. And what's so significant is the people that this is coming from.
Right. Call Bernstein. How about that? And your sources. That says unique. Talking to Anderson Cooper about the mental health of the president behind the scenes. 2024, desperation on the Biden side as his family and friends push back about those who say that he's too incompetent to run the country, let alone run for re-election. As Carl Bernstein reporting shows, his cognitive meltdown have been happening for months. We look at their survival plan.
Number one.
This is a death squad ruling.
They've declared the president and former presidents to be kings.
It's almost like a license to thug, in a way.
We do now have a king.
What are you talking about? So the Supreme Court weighs in and the Dems freak out. Donald Trump will be a king. He'll be a dictator. Free to murder at will. Can you say distraction? Can you say distortion? We look at the actual ruling as it reads when it comes to immunity. Jonathan Turley, you were doing incident analysis yesterday and reflective analysis today. Your book couldn't be written at a better time than with the indispensable right, free speech in the age of rage. I saw misplaced rage last night. Did you?
I did. And it's actually what the book talks about, that we've gone through these periods before, and the book explores how often during these periods of anger and division, free speech is the first victim, but so is the Constitution. And what you saw last night was the addiction of rage, you know, that people won't admit it, but they like it. And so the outpouring of it, how rage quickly overtook reason, is always sort of unsettling to watch. You know, the argument that this is, we're going to have death squads and people are just going to be whacked left and right. And what really sort of brought it home was the president's address from the White House. What the president said last night was not true. And he was misleading the public about that opinion. It was not just unfair to the Supreme Court. It was unfair to the public that they were told something that simply is not true.
Here he is. Cut one.
Now, over 200 years later, today's Supreme Court decision, once again, it'll depend on the character of the men and women who hold that presidency that are going to define the limits of the power of the presidency, because the law will no longer do it. I know I will respect the limits of the presidential powers I have for 3.5 years. But any president, including Donald Trump, will now be free to ignore the law.
Is that true?
No, it is categorically untrue. First of all, the Supreme Court adopted the middle option here. They rejected the more extreme arguments made by the Trump team and by the lower courts. And basically, the court adopted a sort of three-tiered system. They said there are certain core constitutional functions where a president has absolute immunity. There are other official functions where he has a presumptive immunity, which means that prosecutors can overcome it if they can show that this was really done not for official purposes. And then finally, you have unofficial acts, which are a great number of acts of a president, and those have no protection at all. And so there was this idea that there was absolute immunity across the board for anything the president does is entirely untrue. What was also glaring for most of us is President Biden citing himself as a paragon of constitutional fealty. You know, this president has racked up an impressive array of losses in federal court that have repeatedly found that he has violated the Constitution, including racial discrimination rulings. But also, you have a president who, as I discuss in my new book, is the most anti-free speech president since John Adams. I mean, he has created an unprecedented system of censorship through financial support in his public statements. So the idea that he is really the symbol of constitutional fealty is really alarming. It's so detached from reality.
Yeah, the student loans is probably the another example that stands out, too, where he said, I defied the Supreme Court. They said no, and I didn't quit. I found a way to do it. Well, don't you think some of this distortion – the president went to law school, allegedly, thought he was at the top of his class. Turns out he was at the bottom of his class. Who knew? And at Syracuse. But do you think he knows he was distorting the truth? Or do you think he was just feeding off of Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who wrote the dissenting opinion? She said, the president of the United States is the most powerful person in the country and possibly the world. When he uses his official powers in any way under the majority's reasoning, he will now be insulated from criminal prosecution. Orders the Navy SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival, immune. Organizes a military coup to hold onto power, immune. Takes a bribe in exchange for pardon, immune, immune, immune. Is that accurate?
No. And I was really surprised by the hyperbolic rhetoric in the dissent. I thought it undermined the dissent. Look, I'm not a huge fan of presidential power. I'm a Madisonian scholar. I tend to favor Congress and fights with the president. But I felt there were good faith arguments on both sides. And even the opposing side, the government acknowledged that there was immunity for many of these issues. They just didn't want sweeping absolute immunity. And as Chief Justice Roberts lays out, there's always been a recognition of immunity for presidents. They're just simply, in this opinion, clarifying where that line is. What was really amazing last night, looking at Joe Biden, is he was vice president when President Obama killed a U.S. citizen in a drone strike.
Alawaki.
Yes, and he was vice president. And then the Obama administration fought the family's efforts to try to litigate the issue. So should Obama and Biden have been charged with murder in that case? Should they be charged with crimes associated with – you know, I represented Congress when Obama ordered funding that had not been given to his administration for Obamacare. And we won on that issue, that he had essentially spent millions and millions of dollars that for a purpose not approved by Congress. Was that a crime he could be charged with? That's what the majority was trying to get at. They were trying to find a way to give presidents breathing room. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, when Robert says, look, a president needs to have communications with their aides, previous Democratic administrations, including the Obama administration, argued that point. So all this hyperventilation by pundits is amazing, since they were completely silent when Obama vaporized a citizen or argued some of these very same points.
I don't want to get you angrier, Jonathan, but I do want to play a little bit more for our audience. Here's more. Rachel Maddow, Joy Reid, Van Jones, Nicole Wallace. Cut four.
This is a death squad ruling. This is a ruling that says that as long as you can construe it as an official or quasi-official act, you can do absolutely anything. Absolutely anything, and never be held accountable, not only while you are president, but forever.
They've declared the president and former presidents to be kings, but they've also declared themselves the hand of the king.
It's almost like a license to thug in a way. Like, you can do whatever you want, and Supreme Court is probably going to let you get away with it.
So that's Van Jones. It's a license to thug.
Yeah. Well, the amazing thing is that, you know, we have the most successful constitution, the longest serving constitution in the world, that's here, still here for a reason. We have survived periods that would reduce most countries into a fine pumice. And the reason is that we have a system designed to survive. And, you know, what these people ignore is that there are checks and balances on a president. He can be impeached. He can be removed. There are federal courts that can enjoin him. There are all of these protections. Just because the president can't be criminally charged doesn't mean that the president can't be stopped. And so all of this effort to suggest that the president now is just basically a government unto himself ignores the entirety of the Constitution. But it also reflects this crisis of faith that we have today, that and is being fueled by members of Congress and political leaders who are saying, oh, we now have a tyranny. We now have a dictatorship. We're going to have death squads. You had Whoopi Goldberg saying that gays and reporters will just be disappeared. You have many people saying this will be our last election. All of that overheated rhetoric obviously is quite popular, but it's also dangerous because there's some people that believe it. They actually believe that that's true.
I know.
And if they do, they believe that anything they do then is justified.
So what you do is got to keep Joe Biden in office because Donald Trump will be a king. And they, you know, it's got to be to a degree of pushback, but also understand that people are being hyperbolic. So let me give you an example. If, for example, Richard Nixon wanted immunity for Watergate, right? Didn't he say I have presidential immunity? Yes. Under this, would President Nixon have gotten immunity for Watergate?
Watergate was a break-in of your political opponent's headquarters.
Right.
He would have to somehow argue that that was an official function, and courts would reject it. You know, the closer question comes when you have something like the Pentagon Papers, right, where you have the president ordering something to get the Pentagon Papers back from Ellsworth, someone else, Ellsberg, I mean. Then it gets a little tougher because he's claiming that he was trying to protect national security. But even in those gray areas, it doesn't mean that the president can do it. Right. He can be enjoined. He can be impeached. He can be removed as President Nixon was. So when people say, you know, John Dean saying President Nixon could have gotten away with it. Why? I mean, even if, let's assume for a second that a court says that breaking into the opposing party's office in the Watergate is an official function for the purpose of immunity. It doesn't mean that he has immunity from impeachment.
Right. So real quick on Chutkan, on the next phase with President Trump. So the judge suggested in the defense and prosecution, when she regained control of the case, she intended to give Trump an extra day of preparation for each day he lost in the stay of the proceedings. So if she sticks to that decision, she'll owe Trump 82 days of preparations and that and before any trial could begin, equivalent to maybe December 13th when the case was first frozen. And the original schedule would be March 4th. But there's no trial date set at the moment. Would likely start counting those 2.5 months only after she conducted her fact-finding hearing. The fact-finding hearing would force Jack Smith to say everything he's got in order to persuade that this was outside the president's discretion and his job description, right?
Right. You know, Smith has the advantage of having a very favorable judge who is also very motivated. She tried to support Smith in getting a trial before the election. And many of us were surprised because the D.C. District Court is not called the Rocket Docket. That's the Virginia Court across the river. The D.C. courts operate on a much more deliberative and slow pace. She took out all the stops. And by the way, that ultimately hurt her because she was moving so fast to try to get a trial before the election. She didn't create any record. So now she has to create a record. That's going to take time. I'm very doubtful. She has to deal with the Fisher decision, which knocked out potentially the obstruction count. Those two decisions sort of ripped the wings off Smith's case. So he's got to put it back together either in a superseding indictment or he's going to have to come up with a very creative way to go forward on part of these charges.
So the president is asking for his New York case conviction to be dismissed under this new immunity ruling. Does he have standing?
Oh, he does have standing. The question is, will it be successful? What I think Mershon is likely to say, because Mershon's ruled against him fairly consistently, is that Mershon's likely to say, well, he's going to do a type of harmless error type of analysis and say, yeah, maybe Hope Hicks falls into this area, but she was not the really key witness. And I think that even if you take Hope Hicks's testimony out, there was ample evidence for the jury to reach this conclusion. But that's going to create a new appellate decision. So the odds are still against his setting aside the conviction, but it adds another appellate issue for, and by the way, that's quite a pile on, because I think that Mershon's already committed reversible error.
All right. We've got to pick up Jonathan Turley's book, because he's not available as much as he wants to be to everybody individually. So this is a great way to get his philosophy, The Indispensable Right, Free Speech in an Age of Rage. Jonathan, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
All right. 1-866-408-7669. I know you're listening to The Distortion and the rage yesterday. Let's put it all in perspective today. Also, the explosive words of Carl Bernstein that might just be blowing up Joe Biden. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
These people who have supported him, loved him, campaigned for him, see him often, say that in the last 6 months particularly, there has been a marked incidence of cognitive decline and physical infirmity.
So that is Carl Bernstein saying his reporting. Multiple people close to him say there was a time in which he had a fundraiser. At the fundraiser at the Four Seasons, he got up to speak and he just froze. He sat there. Then they quickly got up and got a chair. They said he froze like rigor mortis set in. And they quickly got a chair and he ended up sitting down and didn't finish the speech. We know in the Hamptons over the weekend, he used for a 5-minute remarks in somebody's house. They used a prompter. That's according to Scaramucci, who was there, who was a Republican who wants to pretend to be a Democrat because he hates Trump. And now you have Jake Tapper calling out Chris Coons, and I'll play this for Alan West next, calling out Chris Coons and saying, listen, I know you're close to him, but you can't say this is a bad night. You say there's multiple things are happening. And then he agrees with Jake Tapper that he should do a long press conference. But I don't want one. You got to be able to address the people on a regular basis and tell us what's happening. Reassure people about the border. Let them know about inflation. Give them a heads up about interest rates. Don't think we understand what your game plan is in Ukraine. We don't. Just because we haven't heard anything in 3 weeks in Gaza, it doesn't mean these anti-Semitic parades have not raged across our country, including one that broke up a pride parade in New York City. If you're a president on top of things, you answer those questions for the people through the press. He turns his back on all of us.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think it is easy to settle this right now by President Biden going to the Brady Press Center, the press file in the White House, and doing a 2-hour press conference. Everybody would cover it live. Networks probably would cover it live. He'd answer all these questions. It's not a crazy thing to expect a president to do. And the fact is, you know that. The campaign knows that. The White House knows that. That's how you settle this.
And that is Jake Tapper telling Chris Coons, who took the Senate seat from Joe Biden when he became vice president. They're really good friends. He mentored Chris Coons. And Chris Coons agreed. He needs to do this. And I told the White House that. But Chris Coons is also on the illusion that it would be good news for Joe Biden. I don't think he'd be able to do it. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now, Dallas County Republican Party chair, and served military for years, former congressman from Florida, now in Texas. Colonel, your thoughts about what Jake Tapper just said. Do you think that Joe Biden has to do what he just said?
It would help his case, but there's no way possible that a two-hour press conference, when you just bombed a 90-minute debate, the only way that Joe Biden would be able to do that if he had all of the questions prepared for him.
Oh, yeah.
He sat up there, had everything in a notebook, kind of like Karine Jean-Pierre, and he just turned the page and just read whatever the response was. He does not have the capacity to do extemporaneous thought and extemporaneous speech, and that was very clear, very apparent. And so I got to ask, you know, and I think everyone should be asking, what happened for 7 days up there at Camp David when they were supposed to be doing quote-unquote debate prep, and who was in charge of the country for those 7 days. So I don't think that he has the capacity to be able to do it. Everyone knows that that was not a successful debate.
So then you have Bernstein, call Bernstein, come out and say that his reporting says that he's had over the last 6 months rapidly cognitive decline. And they talk about freezing moments. Listen to this about the debate prep, cut 20.
The debate prep was supervised by Ron Klain, who has been with President Biden for many years. And people I've talked to have all been to Ron Klain in the last year to say, we have a problem. We have a problem such as we saw the other night, that there have been numerous instances where the president has lost his train of thought, can't pick it up again. There was a fundraiser at which he started at the podium, and then he became very stiff, according to the people there, as if it were almost a kind of rigor mortis. This was a year ago almost exactly at the old Four Seasons restaurant on Park Avenue, and he became very stiff, and a chair had to be brought for him to do the latter part of the event.
So he held on to this story for a year. So your thoughts about what he just revealed. This is Carl Bernstein, Mr. Russia hoax and Watergate fame.
Well, without a doubt, the media is so complicit in this, and they colluded to perpetuate one of the greatest lies against the American people, that everything was okay, Joe Biden was fine. And remember this whole thing about cheap fakes? There were no cheap fakes. I mean, these were videos that showed exactly what was happening with the president. And I think it was confirmed when you saw after the CNN debate, Joe Biden had to come up there and help Joe Biden off the stage. And when you look at his gait, when you look at how he stepped off the stage, he had to do a sidestep because he is frail, he is weak, and he is not confident. And I think that he has the problems with seeing, you know, three-dimensional with steps. And you can go back and remember his problem with going up the steps into Air Force One to the point where now they have him using the lower steps. So all of these things, you know, have come to fruition. It is now in front of the American people, but also the world saw. Xi Jinping saw, Vladimir Putin saw, the mullahs and the ayatollahs of Iran saw, Kim Jong-un's ill saw. You know, they all see now that we have a weak and frail president, and there's a window of opportunity for them to take advantage of America.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. If you want to move on Taiwan, now's the time. And also, if you're Iran and you want to finish off that nuclear program, now's the time. Not only is it because Joe Biden's in office, it's because if he isn't, Donald Trump is. And Donald Trump will tend to change the texture on everything. Everything I just discussed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You think about Iran as a nation was literally broke, bankrupt. But you see the filling of the coffers of Iran by tens of billions of dollars. And so now, guess what? The number one state sponsor of Islamic terrorism is sponsoring Islamic terrorism. The Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, they are, you know, pushing out their drones to even Russia so that they can use it in Ukraine. And these are all the things that are a result of the Biden policy. The Biden policy that wanted to reinstate the Iranian nuclear agreement. And you see the weakness toward China and what they're doing and the aggressive moves that they're making. And, of course, you did not have Russia thinking about going into Ukraine when President Trump was there. That happened with President Biden. And first, it happened with President Obama.
So the strategy with the Biden family is this. Squeeze polls for the Jews. Anything good about it? Warn of chaos, meaning Trump. Limit dissent. With too bad. I mean, it's. I just saw Kristen Welker of Meet the Press said the Democrats would be very relieved if he would just step aside. Tim Ryan, the failed but formidable Democratic candidate for the Senate against J.D. Vance in Ohio, just said that he would nominate Harris. And Bill Maher just came out and said, I'm going for Newsom. Keep elected leaders close. Okay. Get the donor class to chill. They tried. Evidently, there was a lot of unrest. 500 donors on the line last night. Prove vitality as something I just mentioned to you. Let's see him do it. Yesterday, he gave a speech, read a prompter, and just turned his back literally on questions. Ignore / engage the media. So I don't know how you can do both, but listen to James Carville, Cut 21.
We have a country that 72% want something different. If the Democratic Party can't produce something different that 72% of people want, then why do we exist? What are we here for? I mean, the country is clamoring for change. And what are we going to offer them? The same stuff? It doesn't make any sense.
Colonel?
Well, here's the deal. You know, I love SEC college football, and I can't wait for college football to come back. You can change your quarterback, but if the offensive coordinator is still calling crappy plays, you're going to lose. And so the thing that we have to focus on, and the Republicans can't get caught in this trap of talking about who's going to replace Joe Biden. Is Joe Biden going to stick around? Talk about the policies. Talk about the failed economic policies, the failed energy policies, the failed national security policies, foreign policies, border policies, domestic violence policies. I don't give a crap who they pick or choose. It's about their policies. That's the offensive plays that they're going to continue to call, and America's going to continue to fail if you have them there in that position.
Now, Colonel West, you know what it's like to run for office. You got to pick the right time. You got to pick the right district. And now you got to pick the right time when you run for president. Even if you have the skill set and you think you're ready, sometimes the American people aren't. So what the Democrats have done since 2016 is they've decided who the Democratic Party wanted. Remember, Bernie Sanders was surging. And they went out of their way in 2016, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, to make sure Hillary Clinton won, including getting the answers to a debate. And remember, when it was time to pick a candidate, they selected Joe Biden because they didn't want Bernie Sanders again. And they didn't think Elizabeth Warren could beat him. And Pete Buttigieg was bribed to step aside. I don't think he was going to get anywhere anyway. But he started to step aside, and they just said, let's make it Joe Biden. James Clyburn decided that. So the Democrats didn't decide. The Democratic Party didn't. So they're not invested in him. They don't even know how he won because he was in the basement the whole time. It was a perfect storm. And then it was time to pick a running mate. He didn't pick the best person. He said, I'm going to pick a woman, and it's going to be a minority. He narrowed himself into a corner, and he made the wrong selection. And that's what's hemmed in the entire party. They can't even cast Joe aside because even with his current mental state, he's still more popular than his vice president.
Yeah, that's the same as that really the whole identity politics thing has put them into this position because they can't even say, okay, we're going to bring up the vice president into the presidency and run her because that's even more catastrophic. But again, nothing changes as far as their policy. So they are really in an untenable position. And I got to tell you, when you look at the way that they have perpetrated a lie to the American people, couldn't happen to a better bunch of folks.
I hear you. Lastly, here's Mike McCall on what he's worried about with all this death and destruction from these migrants, including a 12-year-old who was sexually assaulted for over 2 hours and then strangled to death by two illegals. They look to be gangsters. Congressman Michael McCall.
They are detained and released into our society. These are eight known ISIS affiliates. Into the United States, the FBI, thank God, catches this thing. And now they have been detained, but they were in New York, Philadelphia, and L.A. When I cheer at Homeland, this is my worst nightmare. My worst fear is to have the southern border exploited, terrorists getting into the country. We never saw that. We saw known and suspected terrorists detained but never get in. These individuals got in, and they were not here on a goodwill mission. They were here to do us harm.
Right. And then we find out about 400 Tajiks who came through, and we let them in. They are coming from a terror haven. They come from rubble. Yeah. No offense, not their fault, but they might be great people, but we don't have the luxury of they're from a terror state. They should not be allowed in.
Yep. And you just forgot, I think it was the three Syrians who were caught trying to drive a truck onto Marine Corps base Quantico.
Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting when you think about the decision yesterday about the Supreme Court as far as presidential immunity. You know, the left hates Donald Trump. But let's just think about if the Supreme Court has said that a president does not have any immunity whatsoever, even in official capacity. The Nungare family, who lost their daughter Jocelyn, you know, 12 years of age, brutally raped and murdered, they should bring a case against Joe Biden. Or, you know, the family of Lake and Raleigh, they should bring a case against Joe Biden, because it's his policies are the reason why their daughters are dead. Or the 37-year-old woman of five there in Maryland who was, you know, raped and killed. You know, that family should bring charges against Joe Biden. So let's be very careful, Democrats, about what you're asking for, because the biggest violator of the rule of law in our Constitution, especially when you look at this issue of illegal immigration, is Joe Biden.
No kidding. Thanks so much, Colonel Alan West. Appreciate it. Dallas County Republican Party Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Brian.
Have a great 4th. 1-866-408-7669. I haven't talked much about this yet, but I will. This is it. The average American, they just did a study, wants $187,000 to live comfortably. Now, if I was living in North Dakota, probably need a little less. I feel comfortable. If $187,000, where are you living? I know that matters, but tell me, is that the number for you? Are you at it and do you feel comfortable? Do you think that number works for you? 1-866-408-7669. I'll talk more about that study. Also, get your calls. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
There's no topic he won't touch, and there's no opinion he won't engage.
One of the great joys of my life.
Call in with yours at 866-408-7669. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I mean, right. That's a lot of money, $186,000, and that's because people have done the math. They've looked at the mortgage, the car payment, the groceries, and they've said, if I want breathing room, that's, by the way, not living luxuriously. That's just feeling like month to month, I'm not under stress.
Right.
They think they need that much money. But the scary thing about that, Steve, isn't just the amount they think they need.
Right.
It's how many people think they'll never get there, or they think they're very unlikely to get there. Almost half of people think they can't reach that goal.
So here's the thing. There's this new study done by Bankrate just to find out what people are thinking. And they say came up with a number on average, $187,000, which is makes you feel comfortable. Just 6% of Americans who have an idea of what they need to earn to feel secure say they're already earning the annual income that they need. That according to Bankrate. So only 6% feel as though they have enough money. About 2 in 5, 37%, say it's likely that they'll one day earn the income, while 31% indicate it is unlikely, and 18% think the income will never get to the level in their lifetime. So depressing. Come on, guys. What about the American dream? Those findings come as Americans report for the second year in a row that they need to make a major six figures, almost $200,000 just to live comfortably, more than double what the average full-time year-round typical worker makes, and that's $79,000. There it is. On average, $186,000. So the other thing is the next generation is getting a little upset. They say that they are getting to the point where they're so desperate, as in Gen Z, that they are willing to do illegal things, extort or expend or smuggle anything in order to reach their goals. So it's not a great time economically for the average person. I do think you could change perceptions of people if you start talking more positively about and ways to get that money, ways to increase your wages, ways to get that promotion, ways to get that better job, ways to make yourself more valuable. That's the conversation I like to have, rather than this country does not living up to the standards that I have for it. The other thing that's happening with seniors, and I don't think this is a bad trend at all. So a lot of people have their big house and their kids move out. In a typical situation, let's say you have three kids, you have a big house, and then it gets lonely and it gets hard to pay for. So what older adults are doing, who especially if you have a fixed income and prices are going up like they're in right now, they found that 11.2 million older adults have been cost burdened. So now they're bringing in boomer mates, other seniors to live with them in their house. And it makes life happier. A lot of times they're less lonely. A lot of times they like the companionship. That's the feedback they're getting. I think that's good in theory. But I also think when you get older, you get to really interested in your autonomy, your privacy. So it makes me sad if people don't have the money and don't have the option. But if you have the option, make the decision. I think it's great, something to consider. But I would also think that it's kind of depressing that you got to open up your homes later in life in order to stay in the house that you lived at your whole life. So quick thing for the 4th of July, I think this is perfect. They did a poll about how patriotic you are. What do you think of the country? Now, 69% of this country think it's the best country in the world. Now, that's kind of low, thinking that if you're not happy with this country, 21% is not happy with the country, you would think that you'd look to leave. But it's up 5 points from last year. But look at this. In 2024, we're at 69%. And 28% said we're not. In 2023, the number was 64, 33% said we're not. In 2021, it was at 69, 26. In 2015, though, 83% say we live in the best country in the world. In 2011, 84%. Where do you stand with that? I mean, I don't think there's any question. 1-866-408-7669. We do. If you want to see the people trying to break in, think they're trying to break into Russia. I want cold and I want to live my life as if I have no hope. Russia, you're perfect for me. No one's going to ever do that. That's why people leave. That's a declining country. Also, Japan's got a huge population problem. Do you know who else has a problem? Believe it or not, China, billions of people, but they have a population problem. So here you go. Here it breaks down on the parties. Fox News asked this poll. Is the U.S. best country in the world? Democrats, 62% said yes. Republicans, 79% said yes. 61% of independents. Why are Democrats so depressing? How about this? Are you proud of the country today? 2024, this is 45%. That number in 2022 was 39%. So at least we're ticking upward.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, back at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, not in North Dakota. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Happy to be with you on this holiday week. We got the 4th of July coming up this week. We got another day tomorrow, July 3rd. I can't believe I'm saying July already. Actually, it was like 60 degrees in North Dakota. I really felt like it was fall. I'm so glad I went, though. You guys all should go. And it is a fast-growing state. I think the population is the second fastest-growing state in the country. Varney and Company, we're going to do a simulcast on television. And we'll talk about what's happening with the Democratic Party. Eric Hovde is running for Senate in Wisconsin against Democrat Tammy Baldwin, who's got a bigger name, bigger profile. But Hovde's got a great resume. He right now has to up his game. He's trailing by about 7 in some of the latest polls. In May, he was down significantly by 12, so he's working away. The last poll that came out on the 18th, between the 6th, 13th, and 18th, he was down by 2. Now he's down by 7 in the last one. So, look, it's all winnable. Tim Sheehy down slightly to Testa, winnable. McCormick down 6 to Casey, winnable. And I think Mike Rogers got a legitimate shot in Pennsylvania, excuse me, in Michigan, where, get this, Governor Whitmer came out. And Governor Whitmer came out yesterday and said, after that debate, to the president's team, you've just lost Michigan. You can't win Michigan. Then she quickly tweeted out, anyone would think I said that. Anybody who says I said that is just full of it. And she used an expletive. Joining us now, a man who knows Michigan quite well, Congressman John James. He's on Foreign Affairs, Energy and Commerce. He's a veteran, successful business guy. Congressman, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on, Brian.
Congressman, first off, everyone's mentioned Governor Whitmer as a possible presidential candidate. She called up the White House to say, listen, I'm not doing this. I'm not behind this. Now, I know she's a Democrat and you're not clamoring to say about her potential, but do you look at her as a national figure?
Well, she's already been elevated. She is Brutus, but she doesn't want anybody to see the knife in her hand, right? That's why she had to call the president back to clarify or whatever they did. But really, my biggest focus on what Republicans need to do to make sure that we hold and expand our majority in the House, that we flip the Senate, and that we get Donald Trump back into the White House. That is what we need to focus on.
But you do need to know your opponent.
On those issues. What's that?
Don't you think you need to know your opponent, too?
We absolutely need to know your opponent. And what we know about Gretchen Whitmer is she's the COVID killer. She put COVID-positive people with seniors in nursing homes. She went to BLM rallies while she was also shutting down churches, masking our kids, black kids falling further and further behind. Rules for me, not for thee. She had her staff flying to Florida. And she was celebrating birthdays at bars when everybody else was shut back in their homes. Election interference, going without her constitutional authority, presuming signatures valid without the legislature. She talked about fixing the damn roads. Well, has she? No. The infrastructure in the state of Michigan, C-minus, or roads are D. Education, worse than Mississippi. Gutting mental health resources as our society, particularly our kids are at a breaking point. She's selling out to China. And on the FBI terror watch list, people who are crossing illegally into this nation, like 86% of them are crossing at northern border states like North Dakota and Michigan. Having her there would be worse than Joe Biden. And the best way for us to fix that is, yes, know who we're dealing with, but not getting fixated on those things. We need to get fixated on showing up to the polls. We need to be fixated on holding the House, winning the Senate, and getting President Trump back to the White House.
So right now, what I find interesting is that Trump's leading in Michigan. Because mainly they say because of the Muslim population is so upset that Biden's too pro-Israel. Do they know that Trump is going to be much more pro-Israel?
They do, but they also recognize that most people aren't single-issue voters. They recognize that when Trump was in office 4 or 5 years ago, people had more money in their pockets. They were safe walking down the street, and they could compete. They also recognize that we had relative peace in the Middle East. We had peace in Europe, and in China and Russia weren't literally on our doorstep, sending naval vessels off the coast of Florida. Right now, it's still open season on Americans abroad, and with wide open borders here, who knows what sleepers are lying in our own neighborhood, ready to do harm to Americans.
What do you think that, you know, people are saying that, you know, Joe Biden's fortunes are Joe Biden's fortunes. It'll be bad for the Democrats to lose the White House. I think about down ticket. So, you know, when people go to the polls in November in a presidential election, they're going to be thinking about that. How much does that help you? How do you capitalize on that in an effort to keep the House where there's just a handful of seats contentious?
Well, this is critical. When you look at the seats that are available, when you look at the swing states, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Wisconsin, and the linchpin of all that is holding up the blue wall in Michigan. When you look at the top of the ticket has had to overcome in past years, and you look at the momentum that we have going into the summer, this is in territory that we haven't seen before. We have an advantage going into the summer, whereas we have not. Hillary Clinton was running ahead of Trump by 8.3 at this particular point 8 years ago, and Biden was running ahead by 7.5. And right now, Trump and average polls in Michigan is running at a lead. I think that, again, if we continue to knock the doors, we continue to participate, I absolutely believe that the energy that we have is from the grassroots up, is from the bottom up, and that's authentic and real, whereas what the Democrats have is from the top down. It's inauthentic, and it's back now where over 40% of Democrats don't believe that Joe Biden should be the nominee, and when you look at the third-party candidates are overwhelmingly drawing from Democrats, that's almost 50% of Democrat voters who don't believe in their top of the ticket, where most Republicans will crawl over broken glass to make sure that we keep our country safe and free under a Trump presidency.
I mean, during that, with that open Senate seat, if you want to win that seat and you're a Democrat, talking about Joe Biden is not going to do it. So if you're Mike Rogers and you get that nomination, talking about Joe Biden will do it, right?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is Joe Biden put on display what Republicans have known for the longest period of time. We are vulnerable under Biden's policies. And when you look at just where he was from 4 years ago to how he performed on the debate stage, Democrats saw, the world saw what we've known. Joe Biden's failure on the debate stage was just a small indication of the failures that he had over the past 3.5 years. Joe Biden's failed border policies that are making our nation less safe and poisoning 110,000 Americans per year. Joe Biden's international policies that are resulting in billions of dollars lost in Afghanistan, hundreds of lives lost all over the world. And then to say that he hasn't lost a soldier under his watch. And then you look at inflation and spending and the fact that that the cost of energy is almost is up by 50% and the cost of food and groceries up by 30. People feel that. That's a 30% tax on the most vulnerable among us. And people recognize that his failure on the debate stage is emblematic of his failure of the past 3.5 years. And yes, of course, when we're talking about that in Michigan, that helps because it reminds people what's most important. It's the safety and security of their family, their ability to have a lead, a better life and peace. And people aren't going to get that under Joe Biden.
John James, our guest, and Congressman, when you talk about our military, President Trump looked at him and said, the military does not like you. They hate you, Joe. But for the most part, Joe Biden has always had a problem with the military, right?
Well, folks in the military recognize that we are willing to stand up, to put our lives on the line to keep our nation safe. But we also want a chief executive, a commander in chief, who has the willingness and the ability to lead. But right now in America, our enemies know they have about 6 months to do whatever they want. And our allies recognize that they're on their own. I remember I'm a combat veteran. I flew Apaches in Operation Rocky Freedom, and the scariest helicopter flight I ever had was actually not in combat. It was actually in flight school. After about 10 hours, they put you on a solo ride, and you're flying essentially by yourself. And that's when you recognize, oh, no, I'm on my own. That's how our allies feel. Joe Biden leaves Americans behind in Israel and Afghanistan, and our allies are saying, oh, my goodness, what hope do I have? A European, there's not a single European alive today who has not lived, who has not existed under the cloak of American protection. And if there's one positive that can come of this, is Europeans recognizing that under Joe Biden, they have to ante up and kick in for their own defense. America can no longer be the world's police force as we're staring down $34 trillion in our own debt. When you look at the ground given up, forfeit by this administration that was hard won with the blood of patriots over centuries, and that they're simply giving up, that it will not be given back by the Russians, is not meddling on our Western Hemisphere, is not going to be giving back. Our energy independence that has been forfeit, and now Joe Biden is selling our strategic petroleum reserves to China. That's not just going to be given back. Iran's nuclear program is not simply going to be given back. The cartels who have control of our borders, not just simply going to be given back. China and the South China Sea is not simply going to be given back. We need strong leadership in the White House, and we do not have that in Joe Biden. Donald Trump will bring that, but it will come with sacrifice in the future. We must all be ready to defend the cause of freedom on this 4th of July.
Right, and we're seeing constantly now with the Supreme Court justice decision, now they're saying that Trump, if you put Trump in, he's going to be a dictator, he's going to be a murderer, he's going to be a king, just totally skewing and misdefining and distorting what the Supreme Court actually said, causing Joe Biden to wake up and actually give a scripted presser yesterday. Here's a little of what he said. Cut three.
I concur with Justice Sotomayor's dissent today. Here's what she said. She said, in every use of official power, the president is now a king above the law. With fear for our democracy, I dissent. End of quote. So should the American people dissent. I dissent. May God bless you all. And may God help preserve our democracy.
I mean, her retort is not helpful. Him quoting it. And he's acting like Donald Trump is a king, and that's why you can't elect him. Their goal was to make Donald Trump unacceptable, unelectable. It has not worked.
No, see, here's the thing. Joe Biden's also not going to talk about the Chevron ruling that came out just before that, where it basically held, and I summarized, that the executive branch cannot be judge, jury, and executioner. Right now, under the bloated bureaucracy under Joe Biden and the remnants of Obama's bureaucracy. You have the executive branch that thinks that it can make laws. You see this in their EV mandates and their Title IX mandates, where they are allowing biological males to compete and change with your little girls. And you look at the unilateral authority that Joe Biden has exercised in repealing all of the rules that protected and secured our border, repealed them, and then all of a sudden is refusing to put them back in. Yeah. The administration, the Biden executive branch, has been ruling by fiat throughout its entire administration. And now, when they can feign concern, when it conveniences them, that's what they do. They are hypocrites to their core, and their only thing they care about is the preservation of their power. As you mentioned, Brian, absolutely correctly, the Democrats absolutely intended for the courts to do their bidding, and that's not the case anymore. The Americans are waking up, and this is a ruling against it's against the Democrats' power brokers, who would weaponize the government against the people. And this is a win for the American people who love freedom and liberty.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what happened. Lastly, I want to do this. James Clyburn had a message last week for his generation. He says this: it's time for black elders to have a chat with their younger branches of their family. They should try and talk some sense into their children. He was saying, Clyburn said that if black voters go to the ballot box believing that Trump's rhetoric, a second Trump presidency would be imminent, we may be back into the Jim Crow again. John James, as a black man, do you take offense to that?
Well, I take offense to where anybody, black, white, anywhere in between, believes they know what's better for me than me. I think that that's the level of arrogance that Democrat leadership has functioned under, and now they their policies are coming back home to roost. There are young African American males in particular who recognize that the same person who came up with the crime bill in the 1990s probably isn't the best to make sure they have safer streets and better job opportunities. You have Hispanics and people who immigrated from all over the world who recognize that they had to wait in line for their opportunity to immigrate here legally. And 10 million people who've gotten in over the past 3.5 years probably isn't best for their economic and their safety prospects either. And so this is the reason why Democrats are circling the wagons around Joe Biden, because his policies have failed. And so we're resorting to right. additional pressure and lies to paper over that. And we are not stupid, and people are waking up. And so that's why we have to focus on effort, getting people to vote, to hold the House and expand our majority, win back the Senate, take the White House, and get our nation back on track.
And show up. I love that he's going to Detroit. The president went to Detroit. I love that he went to the South Bronx. I love that he went to Atlanta. I love that he's going to these environments. Look, they could show up, they could listen, you could vote elsewhere, but at least you could begin to tell people, this is where I stand. Don't listen to what other people say about me. I'm here to tell you what I stand for. Ask me anything you want. And Republicans just haven't bothered, and that's been a huge mistake. They felt it's, I'm not going to get the urban vote. And I just love that Trump's trying. And maybe that's why he's got between 20 and 30%.
Yeah, I had the opportunity. The president asked me directly across from the Resolute desk, and I told him respectfully, Mr. President, Republicans cannot expect a return when we have not made an investment. The Republicans haven't even tried, and the Democrat neglect the black vote. And right now, the president is putting his money where his mouth is. He's showing up. He's showing up in the hood. Obama didn't show up in the hood, and Joe Biden goes to fancy dinners in downtown Detroit. President Trump is showing up, and he's like classic Republicans who are recognizing that we have an honor, we have a duty to fight for all freedom, for everybody, black, white, and everywhere in between.
Congressman James, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Of course.
All right, back with a few minutes, and then we enter, you'll get to meet the Wisconsin Senate candidate. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, let's go to the phones. Harold, you're listening on WPTF in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Harold.
How you doing, Mr. Kilmeade? I called your show about 4 years ago and told and said to you very explicitly that Trump should have been shipping these illegal immigrants to the richest zip codes in America.
Yep.
4 years ago.
You did.
4 years ago, I called you up and I told you Donald Trump should get off his keister and go to Baltimore, North Philly, Detroit, St. Louis, Cleveland, Chicago, and go to these neighborhoods and try to get the black vote. I have a problem with the Republican Party because they don't go after, even if you don't get it.
But now he did go to Philadelphia. He did go to those places. Your thoughts?
Well, my thought is this. That clown Clyburn, I take it for what it's worth. Look at these districts that these black politicians are all from, and they're making noise about everything but their own district. Cori Bush is a zero. Clyburn is a zero.
Yeah.
You can't make this up. You can't criticize. I'm voting for Trump.
I hear you. I know. What do they produce for their district? Use their great power and clout. They're not delivering. Nancy Pelosi never delivered either. She didn't deliver San Francisco. You couldn't be whiter than her. They're worried about their own careers.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is a death squad ruling. This is a ruling that says that as long as you can construe it as an official or quasi-official act, you can do absolutely anything. Absolutely anything. And never be held accountable, not only while you are president, but forever.
They've declared the president and former presidents to be kings. But they've also declared themselves the hand of the king.
It's almost like a license to thug, in a way. Like, you can do whatever you want, and the Supreme Court is probably going to let you get away with it.
That's unbelievable, that last one, too, Van Jones. License to thug. You took it about a Supreme Court that said, go to the lower court to find out if what is within the job description of a president. I'm going to say that they should have immunity towards things that are presidential. You know, you have a border policy, you have a war policy, you have a domestic policy. You don't like his drilling or lack of drilling. You don't like with the subsidies in the car business. You want to sue the president for a policy. You can't do that. I mean, that's why cops have limited immunity, I hope. And they're trying to get rid of that, because not saying you're above the law, but you got to be able to, one, enforce the law when it comes to cops and with the president, in so many cases, make the law. So the hyperbolic reaction to it is, to me, an effort to get everybody's mind off the failings of Joe Biden at that debate. And that's why his scripted remarks last night were so ridiculous to me. I want to bring in Eric Hovde. He's running for Senate in Wisconsin. He's got the Republican nomination. He's going against Tammy Baldwin. He's within 2 and 7 points. And he's getting his name out there and could actually conceivably, you got to figure, take that Senate seat back. But it's not going to be easy. Eric, welcome.
Great being on your show, Brian, and good morning to all your listeners.
Yeah, so first off, your reaction to the Supreme Court's decision yesterday on the left.
Look, it's a prudent decision because otherwise you're just going to weaponize lawsuits and attacks against every sitting president for decisions they made as president. To me, the left sounds like a pack of spoiled brats that didn't get their way. That is always the case. And they, you know, claim that they're trying to defend democracy, but all they do is erode our institutions and attack our institutions. Look, they want to pack the Supreme Court. They've weaponized our justice system. They've turned our court systems into political theater, and they say they're trying to defend democracy. Any Democratic president in the future is going to be very thankful for the decision that the Supreme Court just made. And it's very clear that it is only for his role as president and the decisions made there. And this claim that he could use SEAL Team 6 to go assassinate people, political opponents or whatever, is absurd. There's so many other checks and balances. So I just find it typical of the left. Destroy, attack, scream at the top of their lungs about everything. You know, the Democratic Party is, we have to impress upon our Democratic friends that are reasonable. Your party has left you. It's gone. I mean, this is the progressive socialist left, and I'm just not surprised.
Well, I mean, the party has left, and the party can't control who's on top. There, I think that their push for this DEI has forced them into a vice president that really can't do the job. But he said, I have to have a woman. It's got to be a person of color. It's got to be someone that will accept it. And they couldn't lock her out. And now if she was clearly up to the job, the whole party would be switching to her. But her approval rating is actually less than Joe Biden's. How's all this top of the ticket affecting your run, do you think, so far?
Well, look, I'm in a neck and neck race. You know, there's been multiple different polls that have us, me and Senator Baldwin, tied or me down 2 points. The one you mentioned, seven, that was a BS poll. It was an internet poll that's manipulated. So most of the polling shows her and I in a neck and neck race. And that's after they've spent more money attacking me than any Republican Senate candidate. That tells you they're very panicked. Look, Wisconsin is going to be the key state. And I'm not saying that because I'm from Wisconsin. Brian, you've heard, you know, Bill Hemmer and so many other people talk about it repeatedly. Whoever wins Wisconsin for the presidency will win the presidency. That's why Joe Biden has spent so much time here, Jill Biden, Kamala Harris, and all the rest. President Trump is now starting to come in. He's been in the state 3 times. So this is the battleground. As it pertains to the Senate race, if I can win this Senate seat, this is not only going to change control of the U.S. Senate for the next 2 years, but more than likely the next 4 and 6 years. And for your listeners to understand, Senator Baldwin is one of the most extreme liberal senators there is. You just don't know of her because she's your typical backbencher, rubber stamp for the progressive left. But she, you think of Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. She just said, Brian, if you can get this, last week or a week and a half ago, Joe Biden is the most accomplished president in generations. That will tell you everything of what she, you know, thinks. Now, she won't respond whether, as since that debate, whether she still supports Joe Biden. She just goes into hiding and the press covers for her. So, look, the race is going very well. They're attacking me endlessly. So if anybody wants to help out, go to erichovde.com, erichovde.com. But, yeah, I feel really good about the race. And this, just keep your eyes on Wisconsin, because whatever happens here is going to determine the future of our country.
Where's your independent level? How many out of the Republicans and Democrats, what percentages are independent?
You know, it's interesting. In the state of Wisconsin, about a third call themselves Democrat, a third call themselves Republicans, a third call themselves independent. But of those independents, a third always votes Democrat, a third always votes Republican. So you really have a third that's about 10-11%. So that's what we're fighting over. But there is something going on in our state that I think is very important. And that is, if you look at and go in the black community, because I spent a lot of time there, the black community is upset, angry about, you know, the open borders. Every state's become a border state. The cost of living is hammering them. They're unhappy. Young black males, particularly males, but middle-aged and younger black males are hemorrhaging out of the party. The Hispanic population, we've had a very growing Hispanic population. They're not happy with the open borders. They're very unhappy with inflation as well. Housing issues, health care, access to health care, cost of health care. They're shifting. But what's a big part of them, you know, Senator Baldwin sent $400,000 to a transgender clinic to reaffirm young kids and not even notify the parents. So that kind of social issues, you know, Hispanics are culturally very conservative. So they're upset about that. And then lastly, young people, they're just not enthused. I can't tell you the amount of young people that say, I'm just struggling to get by. I'm working 2 jobs. I still have to live with my parents. So I think we're seeing a ground shift. And one thing that a lot of people that look at Wisconsin get wrong, they look at the polls between Trump and Biden and say, you know, it's one, you know, either tied or 1 point up by Trump. But they forget President Trump in both 16 and 20, in 2020, yeah, 16 and 20, his polling numbers had him losing by 5 or 6% in the state in both cases. So there's a silent Trump vote in the state without question. So I feel really good about the state and saying that. They're going to spend so much money like they've done against me. They're going to spend against President Trump. So it's just going to be an ultimate battleground. fighting over this 10%, but I think there's some real opportunities in the Hispanic and the Black population with young people.
All right, why don't you hear what Mark said, Mark Penn said generally about independents and what they're looking for. He also, as you know, worked for Clinton. He's got the Harris Poll Company. Cut 17.
When you get to independents here and those people are making up their mind, remember, they don't like either candidate. They don't want to hear about Supreme Court decisions, lockups, lawfare. In fact, 54% of the country says Democrats are executing lawfare. They don't want to hear anything. They care about inflation, immigration, crime, mortgages, food prices. And the extent to which the candidates don't talk about that, they lose those independent voters because they're not going to like either person.
Your thoughts?
I totally concur with everything he just said. I think it's very important for President Trump to handle himself like he did in the first half of that debate. Stay on the issues, hammer the issues. That's what I'm doing in my race against Senator Baldwin. I totally concur. What are the issues that people care about? The cost of everything, inflation, the jobs. You clearly see the economy weakening. Second, the open border, the fentanyl that's poured into all over our country.
So keep it to that. And I'm sure you mention that to the president when he comes there real quick?
I will, yeah. Because it's Eric, so important to just hammer those issues.
Yeah, I'm up against the break now. We're going to do a simulcast on FBN. Eric Hovde, best of luck. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you so much, Brian. Everybody have a wonderful day.
Okay, take it on Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. Going to go on Barney and Company next, simulcast on FBN, then take your calls.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, I see you up there. I'm going to get to the calls right after this, but it's Stuart Varney with you and FBN. You know, one of the fastest-growing networks in all of cable. We'll go on with Ashley Webster, who's filling in for Stuart shortly. And we're going to talk a little bit about, expand on what we have been talking about. Amongst the Democrats, it's amazing. In this world, when Donald Trump started running for president, he's always at the center of the storm. Now it's all about Joe Biden's health. Let's listen in.
Treading water, and they continue to do that as it comes up to 10:51 on the East Coast. If I speak slowly enough, which means, of course, Brian Kilmeade joins me now. Great to see you, Brian. I want to take a look at this op-ed from Bill Maher in the New York Times. He basically wants Biden to step aside and allow an open Democratic convention. Some fresh blood, he says. Do you think the Democrats should push Biden out and have an open convention? What's the likelihood of that, do you think?
There's a couple of things going on. It might be Bill Maher's panicked. He does not want to see Donald Trump president. And Bill Maher is also flat out embarrassed about some of the things the Democrats stand for. I mean, for gender dysphoria as a platform to talk about wig men dressing in girls' bathrooms that we've been seeing. Some of the DEI programs to see the anti-Semitism raging on the Democratic side, the abandonment of Israel just by watching what he's seen. So I watch his show. I used to watch his show just to see because I used to like his panel would have people from all walks of life and think that might be a good guest.
Yeah.
But now he's horrified by what he's seeing. But I'm worried about Bill Maher. He actually is living in California and thinks he wants Gavin Newsom to run for president. I mean, I had Adam Carolla on One Nation on Saturday. You got to be kidding me. Gavin Newsom's approval rating is 44%. Everybody knows that he destroyed. He said he was going to cure homelessness. It's the worst in the country. We know about the law and order. It's gone out the window. He doesn't crack down on his outrageous rogue AGs. So, I mean, he's epically failed when it comes to the border. And you want him nationwide? Yeah. Forget it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, okay, he looks good on camera, but he's got nothing to back him up. But by the way, other than Newsom, Brian, anyone else you think could potentially jump into the spot?
This is what I want everybody to think about. If you are Wes Moore, if you are Governor Whitmer, if you are Pritzker, if you are Governor Beshear of Kentucky, and you fancy yourself president, why would you jump in and take on Trump? Number one, you don't have big recognition. You don't have a machine. You haven't thought about how you want to be profiled. You haven't put together a staff. And you only have a moment when America's ready and you're ready at the right time. We've seen people miss their moment, and they go to run again, and they lost, and they're labeled as a loser. Why would I want to take over this mess? A Democratic Party that stands for nothing after 3.5 years of epic failure? So you have Joe Biden, you want to pick that up and then run with that? This is Joe Biden's campaign.
Yeah.
And legally, I understand it, the only person that can utilize the Biden money is Harris, because it's about Biden-Harris donation.
That's right.
And then who is going to go? It's going to be that governor from Kentucky is going to say to the vice president, step aside, I'm better than you. Do you realize what was be left of the Democratic Party as they blow each other up?
Let me get to this quickly before we have to say goodbye. MSNBC host Mika Brzezinski gets audibly annoyed, Brian, when her guest suggests that Kamala Harris could replace Biden. Listen to this. I'll get your thoughts.
We go with someone completely untested, completely inexperienced, because they seem cool. I'm just not willing to walk away from someone who has worked this hard and has performed this well.
Well, there is a sort of semi-middle ground here, right? Which is Kamala Harris. She has some experience debating Republicans at this level, including making the case against Donald Trump, right? That would be the logical extension here. I agree with you. The other ones, they are untested. A big sigh there on air.
You know, Brian, we're almost out of time, but wasn't Harris always Biden's backup? Why would that option be so upsetting?
Because of performance. I mean, number one, they don't get along. Number two, Jill doesn't like her. Number three, he was forced to taking her because of his political correctness. I'm going to pick a woman. It's going to be a woman of color. I'm down to two. So he picked one that didn't like him. There also, the problem is there's only five people, according to Politico, that deal with the president regularly. Everybody else has been locked out, including the vice president. So we know, and from Carl Bernstein's reporting and others reporting, that we've been watching this decline. You and I have been watching this decline. No one's reporting on the decline until somebody throws a great idea to go debate in June and get everything they wanted.
Yes.
And now we're looking at the carnage afterwards. It'd be different if Trump blew up. You'd say, why did Trump accept it? But he blew up on his own terms. Congratulations.
We'll have to leave it there, Brian. We'll have to leave. They should have had the debate between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., apparently. But
that's
we'll
the
talk
problem.
About that later. Brian Kilmeade,
thank you.
Great to see you, Brian.
It would have helped morning show host. Thank you, Ashley. Hey, Michael, listen on FM News Talk 97.1 in St. Louis. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Brian. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Good. I think you're going to refer to – that was special thanks to Ashley Webster on FBN. But I was just talking about what James Clyburn said to those elder black men in this country. Talk to your kids. Don't dream of – and I'm paraphrasing – don't dream of voting for Trump. What's your reaction to that?
So, you know, my reaction is I'm really kind of conflicted, because I'm showing here that, you know, the Democrat Party is actually thinking about holding – itself accountable and talking about getting rid of or replacing Joe Biden. But I don't see that same energy from Republicans in holding Donald Trump accountable. I see a lot of Republicans continue to talk about Joe Biden, but they're not dealing with the issues as far as the inept bad decisions that Trump made and holding them accountable for it.
We only have a minute left, but I appreciate it. You know why? The Republicans are not unhappy with Donald Trump on and off camera. There's people there, they say, that's not my style, you know, Senator Thune, for example, in South Dakota. But they're not unhappy with him. They like his policies. They like the fact that he returns power to the states. They like that he built up defense. They liked that his lack of regulations. They like that he asked questions. Nobody likes January 6th. But I also don't think it was I also think they beat that whole thing to death, and that's all they got. But, yeah, I appreciate it, Michael. That's the call. I mean, Republicans in the beginning said, all right, if he's going to be the nominee, I'll support him, and some never will. But the anti-Trump factor has virtually disappeared. And I also think Trump got better, and he put together a heck of a team. So that's the difference. They're happy with their guy.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we're now on in Richmond, which we're thrilled. And we're now on in Dallas, and we're thrilled in Hawaii, in Hartford, Connecticut. So we are growing, and we truly appreciate all the exposure we're getting. Jennifer Cohen's going to be with us shortly. We're going to talk about what's happening with Gaza. From a perspective from someone who's just been there, and also the anti-Semitism still raging in this country, to the point where I read the story in the New York Post that this one U.S. Israeli citizen said, be safe, don't live in New York, go to Israel if you're Jewish. And that's how bad it is. And we've been hearing about it. But, you know, in my case, I see it, but I'm not living it because I'm not Jewish. But if you're Jewish, that's the perception now. No one can believe what's going on. So we'll talk about that and Julian Epstein standing by. First, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I mean, that's a lot of money, $186,000, and that's because people have done the math. They've looked at the mortgage, the car payment, the groceries, and they've said, if I want breathing room, that's, by the way, not living luxuriously. That's just feeling like month to month, I'm not under stress. They think they need that much money.
Wow, the average American feels they need $187,000 to live comfortably. How does that sit with you? Do you make that still feel comfortable? Not? Do you aspire to? A lot of people have doubts about whether they'd ever reach that threshold of comfortability. Let's talk about it.
Number two.
Well, these are people, several of them, who are very close to President Biden, who love him, and they are adamant that what we saw the other night is not a one-off. And what's so significant is the people that this is coming from.
Yeah, Carl Bernstein held on to that story for a long time, but it is explosive. Desperation on the Biden side as his family and friends push back about those who say he's too incompetent to run the country, let alone run for re-election. As Carl Bernstein of Woodward Bernstein fame reporting shows, his cognitive meltdown has been happening for months and accelerating. We're doomed if something doesn't change quick.
Number one.
This is a death squad ruling.
They've declared the president and former presidents to be kings.
It's almost like a license to thug in a way.
We do now have a king.
There you go. Supreme Court weighs in and Dems freak out. Donald Trump will be a king dictator, free to murder us all. Can you say distraction and more importantly, distortion? We're going to look at the actual ruling as it reads. And that's why Julian Epstein's perfect. He's a big time lawyer, served as chief counsel of the House Judiciary Committee, staff director of the House Oversight Committee for the Democrats between 96 and 2001. So yesterday's ruling, Julian, essentially the Supreme Court on a 6-3 decision ruled that that there will be a degree of immunity for the president on basically when he's functioning in his job. But stuff outside his job, it would be up to a lower court to decide if it's within his scope of his duties, correct?
That's absolutely correct, Brian. And first of all, good morning and thank you for having me back. Yes, it's exactly what happened. In 1982, the Supreme Court ruled that sitting presidents have civil immunity in their official acts, but not in their private acts. And what the court did yesterday was completely predictable. I think you and I have talked about this in previous shows. It was completely predictable they would take the case, and it was completely predictable that they would come down the way they came down. The best way to understand this is an example. If the president invokes the War Powers Act and sends troops into combat, and some of our troops are unfortunately killed, should he be able to be criminally tried by a prosecutor for wrongful death? Of course not. But if the court had ruled otherwise, it would leave open that possibility. But on the other hand, if the president is bribed to drop a bomb, then he could be tried criminally. That would be outside the official
act. So I want you to hear how the president described it. Julian, I want you to hear how the president described it last night. He's also a lawyer. Cut one.
Now, over 200 years later, today's Supreme Court decision, once again, it'll depend on the character of the men and women who hold that presidency that are going to define the limits of the power of the presidency, because the law will no longer do it. I know I will respect the limits of the presidential powers I have for 3.5 years, but any president, including Donald Trump, will now be free to ignore the law.
So I think that was a total mischaracterization of what was ruled.
That's right. And somebody gave him that to read. And, you know, Arthur Brooks, who was the head of American Enterprise Institute, had this great piece a couple of years ago. We said, you know, what is fueling our politics today is the culture of contempt. So what keeps politicians in office, what drives cable ratings, what sells newspaper copy is contempt for the other side. So you always have to hyperbolize. And that's the culture that we're living in. And what we saw yesterday, not just with President Biden, but with AOC introducing articles of impeachment and sort of the entire left, their heads exploding collectively, was this, you know, the sky is falling and presidents are going to be dictators. And there is nothing of the sort. As I said, we've had civil immunity for 40 years. There hasn't really been any major issue. And this is making that jurisprudence symmetrical on the criminal side. So, you know, if there's a criticism of the court that I would have here is that it didn't give enough guidance on where that line is drawn between public and private. But I think as a general matter, what the court did was entirely predictable. And, you know, Thomas Sowell had this great line that when sort of the left comes out at you with their heads exploding and the moral outrage, the question you should always ask them as compared to what? You know, what would you want the Supreme Court to do here? Would you want the Supreme Court to say that all of the president's official acts are open to being second guessed in a criminal court? Of course not. So as compared to what? And so all, you know, Schumer and on down the line, all of the critics are not really being very substantive. They are not asking or answering the question as to what they think should happen instead. And the reason I think the left's heads are exploding is because this means that there will almost assuredly not be a trial for the January 6th case against Donald Trump. And so, you know, the left wants to blame the Supreme Court. Where the left should put place the blame is with Merrick Garland. I mean, why is it that it took Merrick Garland almost 4 years, 3 years to bring this case against Donald Trump, the January 6th case? Why did they wait until election season? Why did they time this in a way so this?
Well, they wanted to have the January 6th committee first. The January 6th committee, which was built for theater, built for primetime television, was actually hired an ABC reporter. They had two Republicans who hated Trump on it. And people, they produced a great production. And basically, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney are no longer Republicans. So, or no longer in the House.
And that tells you this was not really about the lofty principles they said it was about. This was about political theater. Because if they believed that, the traditional rule in Congress is that the Congress always waits for the Justice Department to do its work first. Congress steps back. But here they reversed that. They said, let's have Congress do the theater, put on the hearings for a year, and then we'll come in at the last moment and we will prosecute this case when we are close to election time. And that was exactly the reverse of what usually happens, which is the Congress defers to a Justice Department prosecution. But it shows a lack of seriousness. Right. And it shows that this was always about lawfare and always about politics. Right. And, you know, again, I've been very critical of how they've handled these Trump prosecutions. I predicted that, you know, the court would take this case. I predicted the January 6th case and the documents case would come into all kinds of legal problems. These were entirely predictable, but you're hoisted on your own petard when you try to be too cute by half.
So I want to let's talk about the president's election. Let's talk about the president's condition after the debates. They are really straining to change the subject and talk about Donald Trump. And they're saying that Donald Trump and January 6th in this trial and injustice, and we got to expand the Supreme Court and we got to impeach him, according to AOC. But then Carl Bernstein sits down with Anderson Cooper and you think, well, it's going to be a typical, I don't know, Russia hoax investigation. It's going to be an anti-Trump conversation. But instead it was Carl Bernstein doing reporting of the constant failings, mental failings of Joe Biden behind the scenes. Cut 18.
Well, these are people, several of them, who are very close to President Biden, who love him, have supported him, have been among them, or some people who have raised a lot of money for him. And they are adamant that what we saw the other night, the Joe Biden we saw, is not a one-off, that there have been 15, 20 occasions in the last year and a half when the president has appeared somewhat as he did in that horror show that we witnessed. And what's so significant is the people that this is coming from, and also how many people around the president are aware of such incidents, including some reporters, incidentally, who have witnessed some of them.
Well, it looks like he sat on this story for a year. He went on. I can't play the whole thing, but almost every word mattered. So the story in Politico comes out and it says that he's surrounded by five people: Mike Donnell and Steve Ricchetti, Bruce Reed, Ted Kaufman, and Ron Klain. And that's it. His sister and his wife. And they don't let anybody in. And everyone's almost afraid to brief him or give him bad news because he bites off their head. He gets angry. Nobody wants to brief him. They're all afraid of him. And now we have these issues of him having these failings that we all saw and were ridiculed, including you were ridiculed for pointing this out. So this is building, Julian. You were first, one of the first, but now it's building. And most of the people who are beginning to get upset about it, you are in your Rolodex. So where's this heading?
Yeah, three of the five White House staff you mentioned are friends of mine. I mean, look, there is I appreciate what Carl Bernstein is doing. I appreciate some of the work he's done. But there is a lot of covering your petard that's going on with the mainstream media now, because they've known that Biden was not mentally fit to be president for a long time, but they've acted as cheerleaders for the Democratic Party. And this is part of the cultural decay that's going on, because the arrogance, I think, of the White House, and I think that to the extent of the Biden family, and I don't say this easily as somebody who voted for Biden in 2020, the arrogance where you believe that you can persuade the public to believe something different from what they saw on their screens last Thursday night is just breathtaking. But why is there that arrogance amongst the commissars of the Democratic Party? It's because the media has enabled them for so long. You and I have talked about this before. You go back to September of 2021, when President Biden thought his senior military brass agreed with him that we should have a complete withdrawal of all of the troops from Afghanistan. When all of the senior brass said, no, we need to keep a skeletal force in there to stabilize the government. Well, he didn't know that. That is a major national security issue for the United States, particularly when you look at what happened since, when al-Qaeda has basically reoccupied parts of Afghanistan and presents a national security threat to us. Well, that's exactly what the military senior brass wanted to prevent. And Biden didn't know that. And we're talking 3 years ago now. And we have hundreds of examples, to Bernstein's point, that what happened on Thursday night was not a one-off. We've seen him not be able to complete sentences or complete thoughts. And, you know, if the White House wanted to prove it was a one-off, they could do something very easily. They could put the president out in terms of in a primetime press conference before a national audience. And if they believed that really that this was a one-off, or that he was overbriefed, or that the makeup was wrong or whatever, he would be able to dispel this in a heartbeat. But they won't do that, because they know the president isn't up for that. If the president isn't up for that, he's not up for dealing with the five or six hotspots that are happening on every continent across the globe right now.
Here's the thing. I don't know if I agree with you that nobody else knew, like David Plouffe eviscerated him the other day. David Plouffe, a key man in the Obama White House, and said he looks so old, especially compared to Donald Trump. And you know, he hated to say that. Donald Trump was on his game. You might not like anything or everything he said. It doesn't matter. No one said he was too old. And that's the problem. And they act like they're shocked. Everyone's shocked. You had Morning Joe. They're like, he went from the sharpest guy to he's got to go. And now they're trying to quickly rehab him. How could they not know? And I don't know the answer to this question. But how could the people that see his failings, like they know his failings, they watched him stiffen up during a fundraiser at the Four Seasons where he almost had rigor mortis set in. Scary. Yet they said, we need a June debate. I got to debate Donald Trump in June on my terms. Even Trump said, okay, if you want that, I'll do it. And we're going to forget about the whole presidential debate conference. We're not going to use them. I'm going to make the rule. Okay. So Trump says yes, he fails miserably, they're blaming each other, and now they're trying to say it was just a bad night. Where's the truth in this? Who called for that debate?
Well, that's exactly right. Well, the truth is that they didn't think Trump would accept the terms of that debate, an early debate, two debates, a debate in June. They didn't think he would accept. Trump surprised them by accepting. And then they thought if he did accept, well, they could get it out of the way. But my point earlier is that, yeah, of course the media knew that Trump didn't have the mental fitness for a second term, but they thought they could gaslight the public. And the reason that, and they went along with the gaslighting of the public from the White House, the reason the White House believed they could gaslight the public and sort of have another basement-like campaign the way they did in 2020 was because they have so many media enablers in the mainstream media that are letting them get away with it. To the point about David Plouffe and Carl Bernstein and everyone else, you know, everyone else is covering their ass right now by coming out and saying, oh, he should leave.
So I agree with you.
The question is, where were they? Where were they? Where were they a year and a half ago when this thing was so obvious to anybody that was paying attention? And the answer is they thought they could get away with it. And there is an arrogance here. There is a, you know, the thing that led to the French Revolution was Marie Antoinette saying, you know, let them eat cake. It's that arrogance. It's that disconnect from the masses. that the elites have where they really think there's a lack of accountability. There needs to be a reckoning here. There needs to be a reckoning within the party and within the mainstream media about telling the truth about such important things.
Julian Epstein, always great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Ryan, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Meanwhile, when we come back, I'm going to play what Bill Maher said on Sunday. Very similar to Julian. They're Democrats, they're liberals, but they're not happy with what's going on right now. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I have spoken to some top Democrats who say that there would actually be relief if he were to step down. And one person said to me, look, everyone's counting out Kamala Harris because right now her poll numbers are below President Biden's. But if she were to be the one to carry this torch into November, there could be a method of reintroducing her to the country that could be effective with independents, with moderates, with those critical suburban women that are necessary for winning the White House. We'll have to see how it plays out, though, because publicly speaking, the president, his family, his top aides, defiant that he's not going anywhere.
Right. He's not. They don't like her. And the sister, Joe Biden's sister, as well as his wife, won't let it happen. They're mad at everybody else except for themselves. And I guess the president, who's impossible to deal with. Tom Donilon, who's his key advisor, they said, you know, why did you even run him as reelection? I thought it was only going to be 4 years. He said, well, after 2022, the success we had, because mainly the overturn of Roe v. Wade, we all know that. Nobody challenges that. They said, it'll all be about Trump. If Trump's the nominee, and we think he will be, it'll all be about Trump, and Joe could just glide to the spot. It isn't about Trump. You tried to make it about Trump. You knew you were going to do the lawfare. To me, that was a subtle admission that you're behind everything, Tom Donilon, who is a really wretched person. And I think that's part of it. Also, this came out that Tim Ryan, who was within 4 points of getting that Senate seat in Ohio, my WHIO listeners and others in Ohio know this, the Ohio congressman came out and said, rip the Band-Aid off. I've given a lot of thought, and everyone should go with Kamala Harris. She should be at the top of the ticket. She, quote, he said this, I ran for president in 2020. I was the first candidate to endorse Joe Biden. I love America, love our party, love Joe Biden. The Democratic nominee said it should be, in 2024, Kamala Harris. Good luck with that. She'll get destroyed by Donald Trump. And by the way, if I really had legitimate ambitions to be president, I thought I had a shot, there is no way I'd run right now. No way. You got one shot. I'm not taking over this train wreck. You want me to captain the Titanic? And if it's not Kamala Harris, you definitely don't want to take it. You want to be the one to knock over and step over the first African-American female? Good luck.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad you're here. We're covering a lot of different things. One thing we have not dropped the ball on, but is a constant factor in this election. It might decide who the next president is our stance on Israel. And believe it or not, there's so much anti-Israel, anti-Semitic behavior in so many different areas I never thought possible. Number one in colleges, number two in the streets of many major cities. The craziest thing this weekend, and just so how pathetic these idiots are, they actually stopped the Pride Parade in New York City and blocked the Pride Parade in New York City. You believe this? And they have queers for Israel, queers for Hamas and queers for Palestinians and all these groups. And that's what they actually think of you. So for those of you who are part of that community, good luck with your support. They don't appreciate it. Jennifer Cohen knows all about it. Best-selling author, brand strategist, international speaker. And she has also just returned from Israel, where she interviewed a lot of the survivors of the October 7th attacks. Yes, Congressman Bowman, they did happen. And she also talked to the president over there and wants to bring that message here. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you're shocked by what's happening, or are you not shocked by anti-Semitism, especially in this city?
I'm really shocked. I'm actually, I grew up very culturally Jewish, traditionally Jewish, culturally Jewish, but I wasn't someone who was super embedded.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like on the periphery. I never really thought about it. And when October 7th happened, what quickly arose, I was more than shocked of how people were not very sympathetic to Israel and exceptionally sympathetic to the other side. And that's when I started to really kind of shift and really create myself. I kind of become like an I became like an accidental activist mm-hmm. in a lot of ways that I never thought in a million years would be like my part-time, full-time job.
And what did you do in that activism?
You know, I started using my platform to speak up. I started to post incessantly like a lot of other people. I started to try to spread the message. I used my podcast called Habits and Hustle to really bring on a lot of people to shed light, educate other people with information. That's what's really happening. And the problem is people don't know what they don't know, and they're getting their information from TikTok, which is the most anti-Semitic place you can possibly be. And then these Yahoos take a 30 or 10 second clip and sing it as gospel. That's what's happening.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And now I think the Israelis are starting to get a little bit better at it and putting out more of these families and show, yeah. and put up the horrific video from October 7th too. I think that's all part of it. So having said all that, there's some things when you say people don't know what they don't know. Even Hillary Clinton came out of all people and said, why do people keep talking about a two-state solution? They had an option, the best one. And they, the Palestinians don't want a two-state solution. It's the most arrogant, inane thing you could say.
Well, exactly. In 2005, we left Gaza. We basically handed them the keys and said, here, you know, have at it. They chose to create and spend all this money on tunnels and all these other things. They and now we, or the Israelis, or Israel, basically built an incredible infrastructure and defense system. They didn't. And now we're to blame. Like constantly Israel is being held to a higher standard than any other country. And that just shows where people's mind is and how many people, anti-Semitism is so embedded in the DNA. And any shot or any chance that people can actually show it is coming out. That's what's happening.
So this is a little from your interview with Israeli President Isaac Herzog. Cut 35.
People don't understand. And they don't understand that, you know, it always starts with the Jews, always starts with the Israelis, which will never end there. There's a wave of hate that's flooding the world yeah. and has to be dealt with forcefully.
Absolutely.
You see those encampments. You see, there was yesterday a terrible demonstration in London. Mm-hmm. Terrible, calling for violence, for genocide of Jews. That's all there is to it. And this empire of evil from Tehran, spreading hate, money, armaments, ammunition. All the cost of living of every American and Canadian is impacted by the Houthis, which are controlled and operated by the Iranians because they're closing the high seas. It's a big issue. It's a worldwide issue.
He's 100% right. And you're talking about the Houthi rebels shutting down the Red Sea. This bunch of tribesmen. We can't seem to blow them up.
Well, there's a couple things. There's two. I think also Israel. What I got from when I was in Israel was that they were all focused on the north. They were never expecting this to happen where it happened.
Hezbollah,
right? And what has happened is that in a way that's how things have actually started. That's how it became what it became because people were not Israel was not really focusing on the area that actually became the problem. And there's a lot of different infighting. And by the way. Even in terms of the Palestinians or the Arabs, no other Arab country wants to bring them in. That's the other thing. We are being held to such a high standard of blame and fault. And I think that there's the misinformation and the messaging from Israel has to be framed differently to get more support from other people to understand about all the different tribes and what's happening beyond just this particular circumstance.
It's really not that difficult. It really isn't. It's all Iran. They've helped fund everything, if not supply most yep. of everything. They've also fomented the unrest in Syria. They've propped up Assad, a brutal killer. Where were the protests against Assad in New York City? He's killed more people with barrel bombs. So are the Russians. Where's the protests about the Uyghurs who are in a concentration camp, Muslims in a concentration camp because of their religion in China?
Nobody cares. Nobody cares. People want to blame the Jews for everything all the time. And like I said, I think it comes down – it's very simple. I think it comes down to any shot or chance that people can hold Israel or Jewish people to a different standard to kind of show their anti-Semitism, it will come out in every case.
So how do you fix it? You're a brand manager. You know marketing.
I think Israel needs a rebrand. I think that's the situation. I think Israel has done a really lousy job at their PR and about branding. And we are losing because the other side has spent billions of dollars on their marketing and on their branding, quite frankly.
And they got a terrible product.
Terrible product.
What are they selling? They're selling repression of women. They're selling extremist principles. Oh. I mean, you have a horrible product as opposed to freedom and democracy and entrepreneurship.
Well, by the way, that is what is so mind-boggling to me. If you go to Israel, you will see, you won't just see a bunch of Jewish Israelis. You see everybody. You see gays. You see a gay people. You see African American people. You see Muslim people. You see Arab people. And everyone's living happy and together in united. But yet, at the same time, there's a disconnect between those things. Like what you were saying earlier about the pride parade. Like if you know, and I'm sure you do, if they were to go to anywhere, if they were to go to Gaza, they would be killed. They would be thrown off a roof. If their toe hit that land, they would be thrown off a roof in 3 seconds. And yet they're out there like saying free Palestine. They don't even know what they're saying. This is the thing. People don't even know what they're saying. They're just like, I think what's happening is people want to feel like they're part of a community. They don't even know what community they're even part of, but they just want to feel accepted or something. So they're going out there and saying all these crazy things.
Because they feel as though they're standing up for the repressed.
But oh, God, please. They're clueless.
So let me ask you, you met with the mayor last night?
And
Richie Torres?
So for the last, why I'm in New York in the first place is I was hosting a summit called Voices for Truth, which was basically to combat anti-Semitism. And it was for 300 social media influencers and a lot of other people who are very much united for pro-Israel initiatives. And the idea behind it was to educate and to unite and basically to give all these people who are supporting Israel a big hug. Basically, like, you know, get off of social media. Let's come together. Let's hug each other. And let's figure out a way to kind of combat this really growing problem. What's happening on the campuses? By the way, what's happened is now it's become socially acceptable to be anti-Semitic. That's what's happening. That is basically what happened pre-World War II. And so if people don't make a shift quickly, that's where we're heading.
I don't really see many Republicans who are anti-Semitic, and there's not many Republicans that are anti-Israel. You got to really go far and wide. Do you think that'll affect an election?
Well, I think you obviously saw what happened the other night with Donald Trump and Biden with that whole terrible.
Yes, we've been reporting on it.
Yes.
When he had a mental breakdown for 90 minutes in a debate he begged to have.
By the way, I just think it's elderly abuse at this point. I think he has to be like kind of easily, it's kind of. He has to bow out gracefully, or someone has to like allow him to bow out gracefully.
Like his wife.
I mean, I don't even know how is she allowing him to be doing this?
She's pushing him to do it.
It's so embarrassing.
And the sister.
It's terrible. Like, but after what you saw, how is that okay? Like now that even the Democrats now are like, you know what? This is kind of a problem. We kind of maybe should.
And
do
he's
something.
Making the decisions on weaponry going to Israel, or he's not. Somebody we haven't elected is.
Yeah, I know, because he wants to be elected. So he's kind of, I think he's caught between a rock and a hard place, right? Like, I don't think he knows what's what. And he's just kind of going with where people are telling
what's
him.
What's the perception in Israel of him?
I think they would prefer obviously a Republican. I think they'd prefer anybody. It's not that he's bad for Israel. Like, listen, I'm not a political analyst by any stretch of the imagination. So please, I'm not positioning myself as one. But I will say that the Republicans have seemed to be much more supportive of Israel. And of the of initiatives that not just help Israel, but help Western civilization. That's the disconnect.
And I think you know this. And by the way, we're talking to Jennifer Cohen, bestselling author, brand strategist, international speaker, who's picking up this grassroots effort to try to get the record straight and understand who the good guys are in this fight since October 7th. But George W. Bush, too, he understood who the good guys and bad guys were. You know what the result was? When you start pushing and supporting Israel and people realize they're not a threat you realize that these other Arab nations looked around and says, Iran's the threat.
Right.
And they said, if we all agree that Iran's a threat and America will back the isolation of Iran, I'll recognize Israel. And then you had the launch of the Abraham Accords. But as soon as you made the Saudis, as imperfect, and I'm being kind, of that government is, as soon as you said that they're the pariah nation and we're going to go back into agreement with Israel, all hell is broken loose. Whose policies are they? It doesn't take this. You don't take a need a political scientist to figure this out.
That's what I was going to say. Like my role or goal in all of this, to be quite honest with you, is I'm not even saying that I'm not saying I'm the top expert. But what I'm telling people, or my initiative for myself, is to tell people who don't know something to educate themselves. Don't just like take what they see on social media or a TikToker for what's really happening.
TikTok is poison.
TikTok is poison.
And China, guess what? That's China's objective.
Yes, and it is. And by the way, that's what I spoke to. When I went to Israel, that was what the main messaging point was. That's what the president and I were speaking about a lot. That is exactly the initiative. They were told in all uncertain terms that is what, from high officials, that is the point right now of TikTok. TikTok is very much skewed towards the other side strategically. So that is what it is. And the problem is, though, young people get their information from TikTok. That's it. Period. End of story.
Right. And that's why it's got to be banned. And I hope whoever wins understands that, because Congress passed that. And this president signed it. You got to ban it. Simple as that. Lastly, I want you to hear more from your interview with President Herzog. Cut 36.
We are faced with a warmonger and a monster who leads that war, who initiated that war. His name is Yahya Sinwar. He is the head of Hamas. He is in the bunkers in Gaza. He doesn't want any deal. He keeps on rejecting every offer. Five times Israel has, compromised. President Biden has confirmed, and also all the mediators, that Hamas had the best offer possible in front of them, and he rejected it, and he keeps on lying all the time.
And that's Sinwar. That's what President Biden says. We just got to get a ceasefire there. As long as Sinwar is alive, there's no way. And those apparatus, you're just postponing the next attack.
You know what? I don't. Another big thing, right? Another pillar point here is the ceasefire, right? Because we still have we have 120 hostages being held. We don't even know if they're alive, by the way. We have no idea how many are alive or dead, of course. But we have tons of innocent people who are being held captive. And the truth is, Israel has said, been very vocal, we will cease fire if you do release the hostages. And from what I understand, from my meetings there as well, is there is absolutely, they do not want to do that. They do not want to do it. But yet, the media, besides you guys, most of mainstream media or liberal media is not talking about what's really happening. They're kind of like shifting away from the reality and the truth of what's happening.
Right.
And they're saying ceasefire. Oh, how terrible. All these innocent people are being killed and da, da, da. Very true. However, what war in history has ever been a nice war?
As Douglas Murray says, you can't start a war and then tell those people that you started with how to fight it.
What other country or what other army basically tells people before they go in and does nobody. No
and
one
the percentage of kills is so much lower. They go in by
so
Hamas.
So much lower. Yeah. They're using Hamas numbers.
Yeah, it's crazy. Jennifer Cohen, great to see you. I'm so glad you're doing this. And I think your fight has just begun. Use your expertise and get the word out.
Thank you so much for having
me. All right.
Me.
And where do we get your podcast?
Oh, Habits and Hustle. You can get it anywhere you find podcasts. Spotify, Apple, everywhere.
All right. Thanks so much. Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Just to wrap up the hour, I'd like to thank everyone who came out in Indianapolis and watched our show on Saturday. It was one of the finest events we've done. We've done about 40, And it was just fantastic. Everybody at the Shelton Theater on the campus of Butler University. So many people drove as many as 3-6 hours to get there. I appreciate it. Next time we're going to take the show, History, Liberty, and Laughs on the Road, is going to be in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. I'll be able to drive at the Sherman Theater, 524 Main Street. Just go to briankilmeade.com and hopefully get the VIP so I can talk to you before. That's when I have a chance to really answer everybody's questions before the show starts. Hey, let's go out to another great affiliate, John, listening in Raleigh, North Carolina, WPTF. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you today? I got a comment on that Love America. Those of us who fought for this country, we love this country. We want to preserve the republic that our founding fathers worked so hard to. I have a little question for these people that don't really know the love of America. One of two things: join the military, ask to go to a remote place, or better yet, where you don't have to go through basic training, go to your local church and ask them to put you on a mission trip in India, in China. Let me tell you, as soon as you pull off that plane, your heart will be changed. The core of your body will do a 180. And when you come back to the United States, you will realize how this country is beautiful.
John, I always say that. If you're critical of this country, fine, travel. And if you find someplace better, stay. You probably won't. This is what John's referring to. There's a poll out. Is the U.S. the best country in the world to live? They ask Americans. 69% said yes, up 5 points. But in 2015, 83% said yes.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.